I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hello and welcome to The School for Dumb Women, the podcast where we investigate the things you're too proud to admit you know nothing about. I'm your host woman, special delivery from your ex-boyfriend, Hannah Varrell. With me is box of oddly shaped vegetables, Alexandra Haddo.
I look like a bunch of carrots on this lockdown, Hannah.
And care package from your granny, Caroline O'Donoghue.
At this point, I'm just talking lavender goods, Hannah.
This week, we're finding out why the biggest and best things have to be written down in stout, why pretty things are never real, and our smart lesson will have you flourishing in the new world. Let's get on with the show.
So, Alex, you're the smartest, sexiest, tallest, and biggest lady in this episode, aren't you?
I am, Caroline. I'm all of those things. I'm all of the superlatives, and that's because my section this week is on the Guinness Book of World Records.
Ah.
An absolutely brilliant choice from you. The most brilliant idea for a section ever, I think.
Yes, and the most Guinnessy idea for a section ever, apart from when Caroline did Guinness.
Guinness, yes, exactly. Well, it came to me sort of like a dream. I was just sort of in my room, as we all are at the moment. And then I was just thinking, that's one of those things that we've all just grown up with that's been in our lives that you probably hear about once a month, you know, something on the news or one of your mates is doing something or whatever. It came about by, I'm doing a lot of online comedy gigs, which are lovely. Please come to them. But there's a comedy gig called The COVID Arms, like an online pub. I think it's run by Kiri Pritchard-McLean, who's a great comedian. And she was posting about how they'd broken the Guinness World Record for most attendees to an online pub at the weekend.
Wow.
Congrats.
And I was like, why don't we just all accept that Guinness World Records is a thing? because it's very, very strange. And I delved down the hole of how it came about today. And all I can say is it started in Ireland with a man trying to shoot a bird, and along its initial story, an assassination by the IRA.
Bloody hell.
What? Oh, you sing the song of my people, Alex Haddo. I'm really excited. I've never heard this before.
I mean, if you'd have asked me to think about it for more than 1 second, I would have thought, oh yeah, it's probably associated with Guinness. But actually in my head, I just thought maybe that was a Guinness as the surname, which obviously the stout is. But yeah. I just thought maybe that was a different Guinness family or, you know.
It's a bit like the Michelin Guide for restaurants is literally associated with Michelin tires.
Yeah, which is the least sexy restaurant-y thing.
Yes,
right?
Exactly. Very, very odd. And it came about because, I mean, the first line of the history section of the Guinness World Records on Wikipedia. I'm just going to read it word for word, the first sentence, okay? On the 10th of November 1951, Sir Hugh Beaver, the then managing director of Guinness Breweries, went on a shooting party in the North Slob by the River Slaney in County Wexford in Ireland. After missing a shot at a golden plover, he became involved in an argument over what was the fastest game bird in Europe.
This is such a specific story.
Is it not just the weirdest? Anyway.
You had me at North Slob. I was done.
Which I had to look at. And North Slob is an area of mud flats on the estuary of the River Slaney in Ireland, in Wexford, in Ireland.
God, you're absolutely schooling me, mate, here in Irish knowledge.
Honestly, like, absolutely. So, obviously, also the managing director of Guinness in the 50s was Sir Hugh Beaver, which, you know, is just... insane.
Well, that's the thing about Guinness, isn't it? Is that they wouldn't hire any Catholics for a long time.
Yeah.
So they kind of, all of their employees were kind of British or of the British ascendancy, you know?
Well,
so it's kind of all very awfully.
that makes sense with how the story develops, Caroline, because... so basically, he was on this shoot, so Hugh Beaver.
Yeah.
He was shooting game birds. He was shooting the golden plover and missed it because he said it was very fast. And he said it was the fastest game bird in Europe, and people disagreed, as they did back in the day. So, and he was like, hang on, there's nothing to check what the fastest game bird in Europe is, because obviously Wikipedia didn't exist back then. So he started this book, which was originally called The Book of Guinness Superlatives, because, you know, it's like biggest, fastest, longest, greatest, whatever. And it was originally to, and I quote, stop arguments in the pub. So it was basically like
a noble aim.
Yeah, it was sort of like an encyclopedia, but of basically things
that you... Useless crap.
Yes, exactly. Exactly.
Like that's some, just like this podcast.
Exactly.
Yeah.
We're basically the Guinness of 2020.
Yeah, and just as popular and known to the public.
Of course.
Yeah, we are also the highest selling book in the world.
Hey, somebody did approach us about writing a book once, and if we'd done it...
Yeah, who knows?
Who knows?
We may have been the highest selling book in the world. Yeah. But we got a couple of free glasses of wine out of that, didn't we? So
we did,
in a way,
yeah.
Success.
Mm-hmm. It was a very exciting week for us.
Yes, exactly. So basically what happened was Sir Hugh Beaver spoke to another employee who was called Christopher Chataway. All these were like Tory ministers and Tory MPs at some point there. They all worked for Guinness. Christopher Chataway is also a very interesting chap, very sort of old boys club. And he recommended two guys he'd gone to university with who were twins. Basically, I keep thinking like this is the old school version of The Social Network.
Yes.
Oh, wow. Yes. The what are those twins called again? The Vander.
So these twins were called Norris and Ross McWhirter. Okay. And they ran a fact finding agency in London. So then they were kind of commissioned to make the first ever Guinness Book of Records in 1954. And it was only 1,000 copies, and they were given away. They had an office on Fleet Street because you could just do that without selling anything back in the day.
Oh, sure. Yeah.
Then they did sort of a proper one the year after, like a sort of a bound proper book edition the year after, and it went straight to the top of the bestseller list. So they were like, shoot. Then they launched it in the US, sold a shitload. So it's like going, you know, it was getting huge, basically. And it's now sold more than 100 million copies in 100 different countries and 37 languages.
Wow. And it's just genius as well, because not only is it like a bestseller, but they have a new one like every year, don't they?
Yes, they do. So both the brothers had like an encyclopedic sort of knowledge of like memory and knowledge of everything. They were both boffs, basically, both two absolute boffs. And they had the... they were on a TV show called Record Breakers, which was still going when I was growing up and was presented by Roy Castle. Don't know if anyone else remembers that. It might just be me.
A fucking encyclopedia of like forgotten British celebrities.
Yeah, yeah, basically, yeah.
You are going to be on like one of those like VH1 shows one day being like, oh, the 100 best moments of British Talking Heads.
And of course, when Roy Castle came on.
Yeah, if anyone's listening, I will fully be up for that. But yeah, so basically that the TV programme to sort of accompany the book started way back in the day with the McWhirters. And I was just reading this like, oh, wow, can't believe that TV show was going on so long ago and only ended in 2001. That was, you know, a really long-running thing. And then the next sentence is like, Ross McWhirter was then assassinated by the IRA in 1975.
What?
Wow. And I was like, hang on. But basically, he was a real nasty bastard. He was very racist to your people, Caroline. And I don't want to get too deep into the sort of inner workings of the IRA on this podcast. But he was assassinated outside his home in London, like at point blank range, because he basically tried to like make Irish people sort of register for everything and sort of keep tabs on where they were. So it was just like really like...
What year? Was it in the 70s when the Troubles were massively underway?
Yeah, so he was assassinated in 1975 and he advocated like really quite strict sort of restrictions on Irish people in Britain. Like they all had to register with the local police in his view.
Oh my god.
Yeah, like that's really awful. Really, really horrible stuff.
Oh, I'm sorry, but the IRA might have been onto something with that one.
Well, yeah, and then he offered like loads of money for rewards on any like high profile sort of crimes committed by the IRA and stuff like that. And then and he knew he could be a target, but then like, yes, it did happen. And then just to rub salt in the wound, his twin brother just carried on doing Record Breakers, and they just renamed the segment.
Oh wow.
They were all Tories as well. Just like, not relevant, just saying it.
Thing is, you put me in a difficult position now, because like, you don't want to cheer the IRA, because nobody should be murdered, and I want to make that clear. But also, you know, if you have to murder someone.
No, but I'm just saying, you know, if tensions are rising and you're being extremely racist to a group of people who are known for taking retribution, like, you know, maybe just don't be so...
Don't play so fast and loose, you know?
Exactly. Yeah, so him and his twin brother also founded a political party called the Freedom Association. It's just a very... And basically, it sort of led to, like, UKIP. It's a whole... They're not good eggs, basically. But you can't fault their memories, and that's what counts.
I thought that maybe... because Gavin Day is in the next room, and he was actually involved in the creating of a Guinness World Record, and maybe we could get him in to tell a story.
Oh, wow. Yeah, do it.
Yes, guest.
Yeah, a surprise guest.
Da, da, da.
Okay, he's here, guys. I texted him from the other room and he's here.
Hi.
I'm going to give him my headphones, so I won't be able to hear anything, but he's coming in now.
Hello, Gavin Day.
Hi, who am I talking to? Oh, it's the dumb women. All right. I don't know.
Yeah,
I'm just in the other room. I don't know who I'm talking to. Hi,
hello.
Guys.
Hi.
You're here to talk to me about a record that I didn't break.
Yes.
Oh,
please.
You didn't break it. What did you do?
You don't know the story. Oh, I'm just giving it away. Okay, so we had to go to Kilburn Swimming Pool.
How old were you? Set the scene.
I was an adult. I was fully adult.
Oh.
This is fairly recent.
Does any adult ever have to go to a swimming pool?
I think I swim in a swimming pool maybe once a year, and this was my annual visit. And
okay.
We saw a poster. This was about 7 years ago, six, 7 years ago, so I was 25. And we saw a poster near Kilburn Swimming Pool with the big Guinness World Records logo, and I was like, we're having some of that. And it said, most people treading water in the same place at the same time. Come down here this day and we'll let you in. There were flyers all over the postcode for like 3 months.
Great.
So I was like, oh, this is sick. We're going to go down there. So we got like five of our friends to all go down there. It was about 9:30 in the morning, which is the first mistake they made. it was raining that day. And we all went down and we all sort of got given our little badges and someone gave us a pep talk. And they went, right, come to the changing room, guys. It was obviously absolutely humming with people. So there were just bags everywhere, kids screaming, watches just being left on the floor and people treading tissue into the edges. And I was like, this doesn't feel good. I don't want to be... This doesn't feel like a world record. This isn't the best it should get, really. It was pretty gross. It was just that horrible Kilburn swimming pool smell. So we all went out. Everyone's wearing their like 9:30 in the morning swimming gear.
Yeah.
We all get in the pool and I look around and I'm thinking, this doesn't look like that many people.
Oh, no.
So someone said, so I heard this one kid shout out,
"Wow, have we got a beat? What's the record? We got a beat."
And someone was like 700 people. I was like, that's shit.
How are you going to fit that in a swimming pool?
But I was looking around, I was like, there were gaps everywhere. I was like, I thought this was going to be like sardines. I thought it was going to be like humming, like something from like a GIF that you see online. Like, oh, it's dangerous.
Yes.
But it wasn't dangerous. It was just a pleasant morning.
China,
like
isn't
a bubble bath.
Yeah, yeah, one of those wave pools.
Mm.
So we all get in the pool and they're like, right, tread water. And I'm like, how long have we got to do it for? They're like, a minute. And I was like, this doesn't look like the right amount of people. And anyway, turns out we were shy by about 300 people.
Oh, no, that's the only thing that could make it sadder is the fact that you didn't get it.
Yeah, but it's like, it's not a record. It's just basically, it's a record for like bad advertising. Because if you'd put more flyers out, you probably would have broken it. But it's just
bad
PR. The PR person fucked up. So that's the only thing that stood between us and a record.
I like that they still tried. They must have known by then that they didn't have enough people.
Yeah.
But they still tried.
But there were loads of kids there. I mean, I wanted to leave instantly.
Yeah,
but, all the kids were just going for it. We still got our certificates saying that we broke the record because they'd already pre-printed them. They thought, well, we're not going to chuck them away. They had a guy come down who was on the British Olympic swimming team. who was seriously fit. God. I was like, oh, this guy, he's proper hot. He's obviously like ridiculously in shape. So I was with a couple of mates. They both were cracking on with him. And one of my mates ended up getting his number. So nothing else, she got a shag with an Olympian.
Well, that's a lovely end to the story, actually. In the end. Like, you didn't break the record, sure, but somebody broke their hymen?
I was going to let you fill that word in, whatever you said there. I wasn't going to pretend to know things.
Somebody broke their shagging an Olympian virginity.
Yeah, who amongst us doesn't want to shag an Olympian?
Well, quite.
Gavin, that was an excellent story.
That was a wonderful story.
What is this episode about?
Guinness World Records.
Oh, very good. Yeah. Very good. My uncle used to buy me that annual for Christmas every year.
There you go.
It was like, he was so quirky and interesting, then I realised it was just a bog standard present, but I wasn't like 11.
Yeah, he got the works.
Yeah.
He was one of those uncles that always comes up to you while you're telling a story and he'll stop you mid-story. And he go, Gav, what is the scientific name for a great white shark? And you're like, I don't know. He's like, let me stop you there. It's Carcharodon carcharias. And I still remember that. That's true. That is literally. Yeah. What about a wolf?
Dave should be a guest on the podcast.
Lupus. Lutra lutra is an otter. I know all this shit because of my uncle and his like Guinness World Records obsession. So thank you,
Oh
Dave.
My God. Did he have links to the IRA?
He just read a lot of Stephen King and was a bit of a shut-in.
Oh, okay. Fine.
Still is?
Still is.
Coronavirus
still
has changed his life. Not at all.
Still going strong.
Well, God love Gavin's uncle. He would be the dumb man.
Thank you. It's an honour.
Hello again, guys.
That was a great
call. That was so good.
I'm so glad. I'm sorry I bamboozled your section, Alex, but I just suddenly remembered and had to text him to come in.
No, that's actually fine because it brings me to the last section, which is just the fact that Guinness started as this thing of like, oh, I wonder what the biggest species of this is or whatever. And now it is just the most niche, silly records. The only reason people ever use a Guinness World Record these days is as a PR stunt, isn't it? Pepperami, you know, most are sponsoring their own thing. Like, basically, you have to pay to put your own record idea in, and that's how they make their money these days. Because obviously, people don't buy the annuals as much anymore. Then it was like, basically, there's this whole other section that I was reading about them today about how like various governments just started paying them to like do sort of weird PR for different countries, and then everyone had to step in and be like, "Oh, that's not really cool." Like,
what countries?
It was, I want to say, hang on, let me just find the link. The president of Turkmenistan paid Guinness for a number of world records earned by the government of Turkmenistan and has bragged about the records set by Turkmenistan. So it's basically sort of, they were saying they shouldn't get involved, you know, governments shouldn't be paying for
records.
Yeah,
that's a bit weird, isn't it? But also, where's the cutoff? Because I'm sure our government could have, like, I don't know, the most number of people called Boris as prime minister.
Yeah, exactly. Well, record. That's the thing. Like, basically, like, they can reject it, but I guess it's kind of like, it's basically just a very silly thing now, but they're still making money, basically, because, you know, they charge you to enter, essentially. But, I mean, some of the weirdest, I'll end this section with some of the weirdest records that actually exist in the book. Furthest arrow shot using someone's feet. I mean, do you know what I mean?
Wow.
What?
But the only reason you would do that is to get a world record, right?
Exactly.
It's kind of eaten itself.
It's exactly that. So it's so pointless now. Like, most toothpicks in a beard, 3,500.
the great blessing of the Guinness World Records is that the visual images it conjures in your brain.
Yes. Like, it's most like tricks performed by a pig in 1 minute.
A determined speedy pig. Yeah, it's just puts weird ideas into your brain that shouldn't be there and just tickles you. You don't actually need to see pictures or any footage. You're just like, that sounds funny.
Longest hair on a teenager. I mean, these sound like Goosebumps books, don't they? Like, what the fuck? Shortest living horse. What?
Shortest. Like, what are the shortest dead horses?
Oh.
Well, exactly. Smallest bull. Fine. Largest guitar amp. I mean, who gives a shit?
Yeah. If you think you were going to like break a Guinness World Record without really trying, which one do you think you'd go for? Like, what do you think is so natural to you anyway that you could break it?
Do you know what? Maybe longest wee. I have quite long wees.
Very nice. Yeah.
I reckon I could do that, and I drink a lot of water.
Longest wee.
Yeah.
You really push out every drop.
I think I could do most times secretly passing wind in one office shift.
Oh my god. Oh, actually, my one is kind of an inversion of Hannah's one, which is quickest poo.
Oh, very good.
Because I really wait until everyone's formed an orderly queue in my bowel. And it's all just out in a minute and then I'm back in. And everyone thinks I've only done a wee, but actually nice. I've done a poo.
Secret pooer.
I like how ours are all just bodily functions.
They always are. What is with this podcast?
They're all bums.
Yeah.
Always, we're very scatological, aren't we?
Yeah. Well, I'll get in touch with Guinness and we can pay them $3,000 to ascertain that, in fact, yes, we are the most scatological podcast.
If you're struggling to lose weight, you've probably heard about weight loss medications like Wegovy or Zepbound, and you might be wondering if they're right for you. Meet PlushCare, a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. If you qualify, they can safely prescribe you medication from the comfort of your own home. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Caroline, you don't look quite like yourself today. You look like something I like, but that my nan would buy and then just get a bit wrong.
Oh, I'm the uncanny valley of things that you have in your house, Hannah. I'm fake flowers.
Oh. They so are very nan-like, aren't they?
They are. It's, you know, I find them so fascinating. Because, first of all, like, there's no doubt about that, like, there's a lot of, like, green thumb snobbery going on around the coronavirus, am I right?
Yes, yes. Very much.
Like, I don't have a garden, I've got a balcony, and I am getting growingly, like, insecure by the fact that I'm the only balcony that doesn't have, like, loads of, like, potted plants and, like, a fake Buddha out there.
Yeah, but, yeah.
All the garden centres are closed, so it's too late to get into gardening. So I was like, geez, why don't we get some fake stuff out there so it's less depressing and it isn't just like a toilet for our dog?
Oh, and, nice, yeah.
But then I was just like, oh, it's weird and tacky, isn't it? And then it just got me thinking in general, like, why are fake flowers? Why do we have so many weird little social rules around them? Like, I think we're all agreed that they're okay in big office buildings, but if someone were to, like, give you a dozen long stem fake roses, you would call the police.
Yes, yes, absolutely.
That's so weird.
I have a friend whose housemate's mum gave them a bunch of fake flowers when they moved into the flat, and then she just had to live with them like for about 3 years.
Yeah.
But if they're good fake ones, they look real.
They weren't.
Oh.
Yeah. The thing is, when you say, I mean, this is my slight internalised misogyny speaking, but when I imagine the kind of fake flowers a woman of a certain age and disposition buys, I'm imagining, like, cherry blossoms, and they're made of that really tatty kind of satiny silk.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Ooh. Yeah, and there's, like, generally, like, one or two sitting in, like, a white vase or something, and they're really obvious, and there's just something about them that makes you slightly ill at ease. If yeah. they're in someone's home.
It's the dust.
Maybe it is dust.
Yeah, I think it is the dust. Because that's so, like, I looked into it a bit because I just think it's, like, a weird thing that we've had them around for so long, but we have so many rules about them in our heads that we can't really explain.
Mm.
And, like, for years and years and years, they were this big thing, especially for Victorian ladies, of like wearing fake flowers on your outfits and on your hats and on your bonnets and stuff. And like, we all read a book from the past, and there's all the thing about like the London season in like Victorian England, about like, oh, there's like
the season.
I have no idea what I've read so many books that were set in and around the season.
Where it's just a good like, point. Oh, which season is it?
Yeah, spring, I guess.
Yeah, what is summer? The season?
The season, according to like Georgette Hare books I've read or whatever, is like a lonely, weird old aunt takes her weird niece to London for anywhere between 2 weeks and 6 months and puts her in some outfits which have fake flowers on them, and brings her to various drawing rooms, and she eventually meets the people who will later be her friends.
And they go to dances.
That's all I know about the season. The season confuses me. But
those flowers must have been like made of fabric, right? Because they wouldn't have been doing plastic flowers back then.
Exactly, yeah. And like, they were really like specific and very highly skilled job that like lots of people did. And the kind of the season kind of revolved around the production. Yeah, the production like year round of these fake flowers. And like, they had to like make them look so, so realistic. And like, the fabric would be put into these molds, that they're like molds of flowers that would have all the kind of, you know, the veins on the petals and the slight kind of wilting. Ooh. It would all be, the pictures of them are so cool. They're like these big cast iron things that are in the shape of these very fragile flowers, and you like put the fabric in there and you like hammer them, and then you have to like cut around those folds, and then you have to like, oh, it's so many. Like, I was reading all the different stage processes and I was just getting absolutely knackered reading about it. And it would like take years and years to like train somebody how to do this properly, and then she would go get married, and it was just like it was this real crisis, because like there was like the, because more in the Victorian period, more and more people were like, it was like an emerging middle class, and more people were kind of trying to imitate, like, it used to be like something that only very noble women did, but then as more and more people started getting more and more money, more people were imitating that kind of fashion. It's when you kind of start having that thing of like ordinary people getting to buy extraordinary things.
Yeah.
And so like happens in every kind of society, the kind of level of workmanship gets less and less sort of like precious, and then it starts becoming this big child sweatshop labor thing.
Yeah.
Because kids have like the very small hands, and so they're good for delicate work, and it just like becomes very depressing really quickly.
Why is it really bad?
I know, it's so sad. And like, there's all these pictures on like the V&A's website of all these like tiny malnourished children in like their slum houses, like folding flowers together for these never-ending demand of like silk flowers. But you know, anyway.
Maybe that's why they're looked down on, because real flowers do die.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah,
and that's okay.
Yeah. So then the First World War comes along, and, you know, the kind of outfits get less and less ostentatious, and like women have to get jobs now, I guess. So their outfits become very streamlined, and then the fake flowers just like go away for ages, which is good, I guess. But then in the Second World War, they basically invent new ways of creating plastic. Like, they create this thing during Second World War called polythylene, which was used as like insulation for radar sets in like submarines. But they also found out that they were good for making flowers.
I thought you were about to say, when the Second World War hit, they found new ways of making flowers. And I was like, no wonder it took so bloody long. Why are we focusing on that?
Just like, ammunitions department budgeted 20 billion. Yeah. Flower department, 15 billion.
What did you do in the war, Grandad? Well, I made fake peonies. That's how I met your
really
grandmother.
Really get the boys' spirits up.
Yeah.
And so they invented this new material called polythylene, which was kind of a dense wax that was really moldable. And then so in the post-war period, people started getting like more and more fake flowers, because they started looking more and more real, and they were easier to produce, and so it wasn't like dependent on sweatshop labor. And in general, like, I find it really kind of interesting, like in the 50s and 60s, that whole post-war period, it's kind of similar to the Victorian age again, because like, it's like a lot of people getting a lot of money really quickly, and like they're being like a bigger and bigger middle class. People get really into like these weird displays of wealth. They get really into their own lawns. They get really into like flamingos and garden gnomes and all kind of just having stuff in your garden.
Hmm. You know what? It's really weird that you say that because today, my friend Roddy, who has been on this podcast as the Batman in the Bat episode.
Batman! One of our best ever guests.
I'll put the video with his permission on our Instagram when this goes out. But he wanted a fake palm tree and a flamingo and stuff to make his balcony into a sort of tiki bar during lockdown. And he ordered a giant inflatable palm tree, which came. And then the flamingo came and he thought it was obviously going to be human size. And it was like 3 inches tall.
Oh, Roddy.
He's been stung by the Amazon curse where you haven't looked at the dimensions. This is only 6 pounds. Great.
But that's the thing, because like a plastic flamingo is not something you would ever think of buying. So you have no sort of internal sense of how expensive or cheap it should be. You're like, 6 pounds, that seems about right. So I find it really weird in the 50s, the way that like people start bringing fake bullshit outside. So they've got like garden gnomes and plastic flamingos and stuff. And they start bringing other fake bullshit inside. So like artificial flowers inside their homes and stuff.
Okay.
Mm. And like it became such a big thing that there was like a huge, I read it was printed in 1963, this huge New York Times expose on fake flowers. And like apparently it became so popular so quickly that most Americans didn't even know when they were looking at a fake flower or not. And it was like the tone with which this entire article is written is very like, that begonia in your dentist's office, that's fake too. And it's like very much this tone of like, you're being lied to. And I find it really, really weird and interesting because it's also the thing that happens in that kind of time period of like, offices, the office culture goes from it being like, oh, this is like Mr. Smith and he's a solicitor and he's got like another solicitor and a secretary and that's his whole office and like that kind of family run business thing, like kind of Scrooge and Cratchit, to like these huge, huge offices that are like 600 people where like that's kind of happening for the first time. People are doing sort of like desk work on a mass scale. So they're like creating those huge office spaces for the first time. And like, obviously no one's thinking about like the mental or physical health of the people in these offices. They're just thinking of like, okay, what's the most economical way we can just have this and like also be able to like bring clients in and not it look terrible. So it's just like the same fake plants on every kind of floor, you know? And it's it kind of adds to this kind of oppressive office atmosphere that sort of began the 1950s and has become sort of like the kind of trope for how we talk about offices.
Yeah.
Wow, yeah.
But then there's this thing where it's like, do you guys know of the singer Bobby Darin? He's like that lounge singer. He's like, somewhere beyond the sea.
Oh, okay, one of those guys.
Yeah, it's very much like man in a tuxedo walking around the stage at people as they're having dinner. You know?
Yeah. Oh, yeah, amazing. Which I've had to do a gig sometimes and it's honestly the worst thing you can possibly
have you done imagine. Dinner dates like that?
I've done a few gigs where like people are sort of doing another thing and then they'd be like, okay, so and you'll just be telling jokes in the corner. And my friend James once had to do a gig where he was literally walking around to people's tables telling jokes and it was the worst night of his life.
Oh, like a magician or something.
God.
Yeah, basically. But like with just jokes on their own, which doesn't work. So
no. Basically, the only form of like dinner time entertainment that works is kind of singing, right?
Yes, exactly.
So that's totally off the beaten track. But like, so Bobby Darin had this song called Artificial Flowers that came out in 1960, which was just like at the peak of this boom. And it's like the song that came out about the Victorian era. And honestly, I urge you all to look it up. It is the creepiest song I have ever heard.
Oh, is that what inspired the section?
Well, I stumbled into this later in the section when I was kind of trying to find like, what? Okay, so we've got these two huge periods of like economic booms where fake flowers have become like the Victorian period and the sort of 1950s post-war period where fake flowers become really huge. You've got this one song that's linking both of them that's kind of about both eras. And I started listening to the song and I got so creeped out I had to close my laptop slowly.
Oh,
and the song goes, I'm not going to sing the whole thing because that would be awkward and embarrassing, but it's like, No more artificial flowers for society ladies to wear. No more artificial flowers, fashion from Annie's despair. And it's about like a child who makes flowers until she dies.
Whoa.
Why did he write that?
He wrote it for like a musical, but then it became like a hit on its own. And it's like, it's almost like it become this weird comment about the Victorian era, but it was also like about the era they were currently in, of like people just like mindlessly working at these like rubbishy bits of shit so other people could enjoy themselves. Yeah. And it sort of like sums up the two eras. And it's like this thing of like they're coming out of this post-war era where, and this is kind of like a theory that's been bashed around a lot by people, of like, they come out of this post-war area and nobody wants to be reminded of death. So it's just like every single home is just covered in these things. And then weirdly, and that sounds like kind of a vague theory, weirdly in like the early noughties, like I was reading this on apartment therapy, especially in America, fake flowers come back again and fake fruit comes back again.
Fake fruit?
In like 2002. Yeah. Like, according to apartment therapy, it was, like, this huge boom in, like, catalogs and stuff like that where, like, fake fruit was coming back. And so it's, like, this weird thing of, like, when people are in these periods of, like, economic distress and also, like, national mourning, they get really into fake flowers because they never fade and they die, and you don't need to look after them, and they're kind of pretty, but they're hollow and soulless. And it just really freaks me out.
So does that mean that we're going to have a big fake flower and fake fruit comeback now?
This is the thing. So on Refinery29, literally in the last couple of months, they have been saying that fake stuff is having a huge comeback for millennials. And I also think that, like, I think millennials are slightly uncomfortable about fake flowers, but I think we do love succulents. And
I killed the one you got me for my birthday last year, Caroline. I forgot to tell you.
Oh, did you? How did you do that? They're so unkillable.
They are unkillable. Even I haven't killed any.
Maybe I overwatered it. Maybe I underwatered it. We'll never know.
There's no way of knowing. But it's like succulents and terrariums have become their own kind of fake flower, even though they're not. It's like a way of having something in your house that reminds you of life. Even though you don't have to do anything to maintain it.
And also, if you have a flat or something that's like not great for light, because, you know, light's for rich people, then actually having a fake plant is kind of nice. And also, you know, like in my flat, our bathroom doesn't have any windows because it's one of those like weird internal ones that just has one extractor fan that has to work really hard.
Yeah, same with us. It's like a horrible jungle in there. I hate it.
Yeah, but actually if you put like a fake plant in there, which I haven't done yet, but I should do, then it would look so much nicer because the greenery just like does something to your brain, doesn't it? Where it's just like, tick, that's nice. I'm having a nice time now because there's something green in the room.
Yeah, I guess it does. That's how I feel.
I have to do that because honestly my bathroom is the most depressing room in my house, and I have a house of depressing rooms. But do you guys think it's weird the way that like okay, so in the 80s and in the apparently the early noughties, fake fruit kind of came in bowls, you know what I mean?
One of my nans had them as well.
Yeah, my grandma had that.
That's such a weird thing. But now we don't really have that anymore. But what we do have is like jars of granola and jars of things.
So it's like replaced it as the display item.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like, do you not think it's weird how much we're into displaying our food? It's like, oh, look, we're definitely real people. We're very relatable. We're very real. We have food. It's in a jar. Look at my food in my jar.
I think it's because we're all trying to pretend that we live in some kind of farmhouse when really we live in a council house in Zone 2.
Yeah, so that's like, it, isn't it?
Look at my jam jars, but they're full of other stuff, but I'm very...
Look at my exposed beams. Everyone wants an exposed beam.
That I've painted on.
I have no grand point other than the many little points I've made, but I just think fake flowers are weird and intriguing, and that song will haunt me until my death.
I feel like I'm going to be freaked.
Yeah, you will. It's like the song equivalent of a doll moving in an attic. That's how creepy it is.
So So now it's time for our smart lesson to round off the podcast. And of course, since we gained the right to vote in 1919, it has been a smart woman's duty to be involved in politics, whether or not they have anything sensible to say. So with that in mind, we've put together a list of options for the government for how to come out of lockdown.
Oh, great. That's really handy.
That's really good of you, Hannah.
Yeah.
Thank you. It's, you know, I do my duty and I try not to... let it affect me in terms of my ego.
Yeah, well, you've done a really good job.
Thank you. So the first thing I would say, there's a lot of people online suggesting that we let women out first because COVID seems to affect men more than women. I say let the kids out first. See how they get on, the smug bastards. They're going to have to start paying for stuff.
Oh, yeah.
Lovely idea.
I can't count the amount of times that I've been out with like my nephew or my niece or something, and the bill comes around and they're just patting their pockets.
Yes, exactly. They never cough up.
Never.
It's rude. And they're always saying, oh, I'm a big girl, I'm a big boy. Fine, prove it.
Prove it.
Don't do the big shot.
Yeah, yeah. Pay the council tax.
Yeah, see how you like it.
Going on from that, you could use kids as envoys, doing all the shopping, trips to the pub and all that kind of stuff. If you don't have a child, I think you could be assigned a local one.
Yes.
And they would just have to do your bidding. I wouldn't mind that.
Good. That's fine. Like a sort of, like a demon from the His Dark Materials series, but a child.
Oh, very that. Yeah. And they sort of take shape depending on your mood.
Yes.
Yes.
I have a question about children. How old is too old for a child to write their age after a drawing?
Ooh, that's a very good question. I would say anything over 10.
That's exactly what 10. I said. Yeah, 10. Okay, how old is too old to have your age and then fractions after it?
Oh, like 3.
I think you're going around 5, 6 there.
Oh, fair.
Oh, 3, you say?
3? No one knows what a fraction is when you're 3.
No, but they always say, like, I'm 3.5. Piss off, I don't care, you're 3.
I would say 6. Because the thing about 3 is that, like, oh, it's so hard to keep them alive that you kind of want to give that to the parents. Do you know what I mean? Where it's like, you kept it alive for 3 years and 7 months. And you could have walked into a train at any point.
That's true. All right, I'll give you that.
Well, let's say 6.
6, that's the official one.
6 is the cutoff. I like how none of us have children, by the way, and we're just like making these rules.
Hannah, please don't assume I might have had a child in lockdown.
Oh, sorry. Yes, you can.
Yeah, you haven't seen me in a while. You don't know. So I think we should give each other all a score on how annoying that we've been during lockdown, because I honestly don't think this behaviour should be forgiven or forgotten. Like, if you bought a guitar and you're playing it on the balcony... you should get an extra few days, I think, on the lockdown.
Yeah, that's absolutely fair.
God. Wonderwall, is it? Yeah, Wonderwall.
Yeah. Oh, great. You've learned 3 chords. Well done.
Yeah. And also, I think if you're doing Joe Wicks more than 3 times, right, everyone needs to do a Joe Wicks a few times because, you know, it's a national hobby. But if you live above people and you're doing a Joe Wicks every day at lunchtime, get a grip.
I haven't... done a Joe Wicks or tuned in or done anything because him saying even the smallest word fills me with rage, so I can't do it.
Even the smallest word.
Even if he just said hi, I think I'd just be like, oh, go away, you manifestation of Hinge, you know?
A manifestation of Hinge.
It's not for me. Okay, I've got a good one. If you posted a picture of your banana bread or your baking and you got less than 20 likes, you're allowed to leave isolation first as a sort of prize, sort of a consolation, sort of a like, oh, you tried, you know?
Oh, yeah.
I like that. And I think as well, if you haven't posted online about productivity, whether it's for or against productivity in these times, you get like an early bird ticket out as well.
Yeah.
And then maybe like free popcorn at the cinema.
Oh, lovely. My friend, I think I've already mentioned him on this podcast, my friend Roddy.
Roddy Batman.
He has come up with some rules about the rules. So he says at the moment, because we're in lockdown, the rules are off. So like, you want to have ice cream for breakfast? The rules are off. Okay, just do what you want. Do what you need to get by. Lovely. And then when we go back to normality, the rules are still off for the next 10 to 14 business days. Okay, so like there's an adjustment period. Then after that, all the rules are back on, but the only rule that we've added in is that you can't say no to anything anyone suggests. So,
very good.
If you want to go on holiday here, you have to say yes. Like, do you want to do a weekend in Romania? You know, yes. You don't want to go to this restaurant previously you hated? You have to say yes, I'm afraid.
Yeah, there's no more complaining about going to a hen night or whatever after for this for at least a year.
I'd love to go to a hen do. Yeah.
Oh, I would go to a stranger's hen do now, honestly. Yeah.
Well, we're available for stranger's hen do's after this.
Also, I truly think that it should be the law after we get out of this that if you're going to the pub, you know, like on Instagram stories, your close friends thing.
Oh, yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
You put like everyone you've ever gone to the pub with and even slightly enjoyed it. Like, they don't even have to have made you laugh there. Just whether they have to be like slight, an inoffensive pub companion.
Yes.
And they go into your close friends category and you literally put where you're going, what time you're going to be there. I'm going to be the Farrier's Arms at 8 p.m. Come if you fancy it. And just like everyone goes to the pub.
Yes, that is such a good law.
Because I am so, I honestly am genuinely stressed out about when the pubs open again, people not inviting me to the pub. Because I feel like I've been a freelancer for so long that I don't like do a lot of like, oh, going straight from work to the pub sort of things. And that like people forget that I also love the pub.
I don't think people won't invite you to the pub because I will be with you a lot and I will be going to the pub a lot. And so therefore you will be going to the pub a lot.
If I see you even once at the pub on Instagram without me there, I'll be
fucking
pissed.
I'm going to do the Caroline klaxon, which is the Caroline's law. On Instagram every single time I go to the pub.
Oh, so, great. The Caroline klaxon. I'm so glad that we're naming it.
Yeah.
Because Caroline is taking a hit as a name this year and we need to, you know...
Bring that back.
Take the joie de vivre back into Caroline.
Yes. Lovely.
I just have one more suggestion for the government, which is that obviously there's going to be a backlog of haircuts when we come out of isolation. Apart from those who have cut their own hair, who will also probably still need a haircut to tidy it up and stuff. And what we should do is a human centipede of haircuts, right? So we should have everyone who needs a haircut in a big queue outside the barbers. And then you just sort of look at what the person in front is doing. Like at the front, you've got the hairdresser. One person gets an actual haircut. And then everyone else just looks at what the person in front is doing and does that to the person in front of them.
Perfect. Yeah, very good.
Sort of like a Chinese whisper of a haircut in that the one at the back will get something not resembling anything the one that the professional has done.
Yes.
Good. I'm on board.
That's good. And that way we'll all have shit hair. And it'll be like, do you know how like in Amsterdam everybody has a shit bike, so there's no like competitiveness over like, oh, men and the racing bikes. It'll be like that, but with hair. And we'll all just have shit hair for a year together.
Exactly. Yes, in the land of the blind, the one-eyed man is king. There's no such thing as shit hair in the new world.
God, I'm so relaxed by it already.
I mean, I have ordered my own bleach online, so good luck to me.
I do think that everyone's going to go back to going to be like in a costume drama when we get out of this, because we're all going to be so scared of touching each other all the time that like it's going to be like very like, oh, hello, lovely to meet you. And we're all going to, it's like intense eye contact and like flirting in like extremely highfalutin wordy ways.
Oh my God. And taking your mask off, your face will be like showing your ankle.
Yes, exactly. And like it's going to be like very Mr. Darcy's house, being like, oh, well, I did rather hope you might accompany me, because like men just can't like put their hand on the small of your back anymore to show they want to have sex with you.
I don't know. I reckon all that's well and good until the third drink at the pub on the first day back, and then we're all just going to be shagging each other in the toilets for the next 12 days.
And on that note, I think if you did vote Tory in the last election, then you should just not come out of lockdown.
You stay inside now.
Stay in. Just have a lovely time by yourself because you think that you created all your own opportunities. So that's fine. Stay there.
You can create more opportunities for yourself indoors.
Indoors. Forever. Good night.
That's all for this week. If you enjoyed listening to this episode, you can hear more by searching School for Dumb Women on your favourite podcast app and following us on the usual social media platforms at Dumb Women Pod. You can also hear us on Soho Radio every other Thursday at 6 p.m. Thank you to Gavin Day for dropping by with his story and for our artwork, Harry Harris for our jingles, and Soho Radio Studios for helping us with the remote recording. Stay safe and stay dumb. Bye.
Bye, dummies.
Bye, dummies.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
I'm Ina Garten. Welcome to Be My Guest, the podcast. One of the best gifts you can give friends is spending time together. But what's even better than that? Cooking with them. On Be My Guest, the podcast, new friends and old stop by my barn for some conversation and great cooking. We talk about food, life, and everything in between. Listen to Be My Guest, the podcast with me, Ina Garten, and join us wherever you get your podcasts.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.